So I don't have a child, as you well know, and there's no future. I mean, well,
I smell an announcement.
No, here it comes.
There's no announcement
Russ.
To report, but I do want to suggest, you know, you get to a certain age, you start thinking about these sort of things. And one of the things you think about are names. And one name sort of came to me, and I wanted to float it past you guys to see what you thought of a potential name for a Frustic Scion in the future.
Sure.
Okay. Can't wait. Yeah, let's hear that.
What do you think?
I should say, I don't like thinking about this as an idea, because there's a lot of things that would have to happen for that to occur, and I don't like thinking about any part of it. But go on.
Okay. So what?
I don't mind thinking about it.
What do you think of the name Elmo?
Elmo Frustic?
Yeah.
It sounds bad.
Why?
It sounds. Well, that's the name of the red monster on the Sesame Street show.
Mm-hmm. You got to think about this stuff.
Yeah. Also, this is an epiphany that I had, because I actually thought about this too. My child's name is Mo, and he wears Elmo clothes. But when I see him wearing it, I realize it just says the Mo.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Russ, okay, I think the problem is it's...
So for the record, my wife just slid a note under the door with and it says no exclamation point. So I guess it's not going to pan out.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of 2007.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and this is a game that came out in 2007.
My name is Chris Plant, and bang, 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 boom, 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 war is death.
My name is Russ Freshick, and I know the best game of the week.
Hello, and welcome to The Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in interactive home entertainment. It is a game of the year show that goes there all year long. A book club, but for video games. And we're continuing our mini-series delving into what you, the fine people of the Besties Nation, which I guess we would just call them Besties. Is that the name of Besties fans? It's just Besties.
I still appreciate referring to a fan base as something nation. It's extremely mid-aughts to me in a way that feels like nostalgic and comforting in these trying times.
I'm just going to throw this out as an option. The best I...
What?
The best, what do you
the
mean?
The best eye. Like a plural of.
Like a plural of a hive mind. That's nothing.
Wow.
So this week we're talking about Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Hoorah!
Hoorah!
Guys, when that first hoorah dropped, my testicles went up inside me. I was like, whoa, we're doing this. I'll kickstart the conversation. Once we've figured out how to arrange the ancient bones of this fucking video game in a way that it would allow us to play it without our computers squealing and passing away in protest, I was instantly reminded. You run that fucking training course. I did that shit like 30 times trying to get that score down because I remember like, oh yeah, this game feels really good to play. And then in the very first mission, you go into a bedroom where a bunch of soldiers are just sleeping. And you're like, oh, look, how sweet. And your squad mates shoot them to death while they're sleeping. And you go like, wait a minute. This game doesn't feel great to play in some other regards.
Let's talk about them separately. Can I float that idea that we talk
single
about?
Single player and multiplayer? Or
no.
Fun factor and political factor.
Yes.
Okay.
Fun factor, political factor,
right?
Sure, yeah.
Fun factor, I was actually really surprised because I had not, I mean, I've kind of been like hot or cold in the Call of Duty series. I feel like I've played most of the single player campaigns. I don't think I finished the most recent one, but I was surprised going back to this how much it's so open-ended, but so smart in the way it sort of nudges you towards what you need to be doing. I mean, obviously there's a marker for like objectives or whatever, but it gives you a very open area with which to achieve those objectives. And it makes the firefight seem really open-ended. It's like, are you looking for cover? Are you finding the right places to like attack from? Are you, you know, going around? And I really was impressed, especially for like a 2007 game. And I feel like this is less so for more modern Call of Duties, where like it just felt very open-ended, and there was like a lot of freedom with how you could approach like different tactical situations.
I wanted to, I was like trying to think back of like when this first came out, and obviously this is the first like modern combat game, hence the name Call of Duty Modern Warfare. And before that, it had just been World War II Call of Duty games. And thinking back to those, like those, the first Call of Duty 1 and Call of Duty 2 are very, very good games. They were both made by Infinity Ward, and they were like really well designed. And they're spectacles, like they of their time. But it didn't really coalesce until this game. And I think a lot of it has to do with just like they just nailed pacing and like player direction, as Justin was sort of saying, that makes it feel like this much grander epic. Like it really, even now, like I was even playing the original now, I still am impressed by how well it's aged, whereas a lot of games from that era have not aged that well. And it has to do with lighting and like timing and music and sound cues and voice acting, and like it is like a true spectacle that like launched a thousand spectacles that came after it, which is pretty amazing.
I was trying to think about what makes it different than those original CODs, because I love Call of Duty 2 especially. And I think it's that Call of Duty up until this point was like a theme park ride. It was very linear, and like you got on the track and the game very sharply moved you from like one action set piece to the next, and you saw exactly what they wanted you to see. I mean, it could be a video for all you wanted.
Which, to back up to that lineage a little bit, that's really a descendant of Medal of Honor, which started in 1999, and that was very much the first game that was like turned a first-person shooter, especially like a military first-person shooter, into a something much more cinematic, because it was, I mean, Steven Spielberg was involved with that first game produced it. Yeah, and it was very much,
he cast
cinematic.
I don't know how involved he was.
Well, it was, but in the story,
Steven Spielberg wasn't like, I think the R button should reload the gun.
No, he did that for Boom Blocks. That he hand coded.
But that
idea of like a cinematic first person shooter, I feel like, especially military theme, was like a very Medal of Honor thing that led to Call of Duty.
Yeah. But what I think is different here is now it feels like performance. Like, it's wild how much the game is. You have the freedom to go run around like a real asshole and just like smell the roses. But there's so much subtle direction. Like, I mean, the game literally just has a director, and it's either the character that is like, hey, I think you should go literally over here and do exactly this, because that's where it's going to look the coolest. Or somebody like is in your earpiece, or there's another character, or the characters line up to breach a door. There's all of these moments that are, you have the power as kind of the cameraman to catch them. But again, you have more freedom. It's okay with you not doing exactly what it wants, which is, I mean, that's the trick, right? It has more trust in the player to like, to show up. The other thing that I just want to get in really quick on that note too is this game is easy. Like, really, really, really easy. And I think that's a thing that I love about this game versus later Call of Duty games, is it is obsessed with just being a performance, and it doesn't want to make it too hard, and it does want you to just be able to kind of flow through this world as the cameraman, where I think later on they saw the popularity of multiplayer, and it becomes like a skill acuity
training
test.
Training ground like, for, multiplayer.
I did want to talk just specifically on your point of the, like, director aspects of it and like following direction. My favorite level in this game is a level where they literally every single step of the way tell you exactly what you need to be doing. Otherwise, I think you just fail. I don't even think there's like you can range off. I think it's just a fail. That's the Chernobyl level, which is like a big flashback level that happens at the end, towards the end, that is like kind of the big like storytelling reveal moment. And that, I think, was like the perfect coalescence of like this idea of like, okay, you have to run here in 10 seconds. Okay, you stay under this bridge while these guys walk over you. And even though it's not like as interactive as or open as Justin was just talking about, like it still makes you feel like it is. And that's the level
people
trick.
Think about when people talk about this campaign. That's the level people talk about, right? Because
totally,
it was so the opposite of the bigger, blustery, like, you know, USMC just like charge in there and fuck everyone up. Yeah.
There's a lot of touchstones that I didn't realize. I wasn't really thinking of this as like, oh, was that one? I didn't realize how many were established in this game. Like the ghillie suit mission, is wild. It's so cool. Is it AC-130? Is it the plane? I don't know. I'm not that kind. Wow. Okay.
That shit is wow. That shit feels. When I was younger, I was like, fuck you. Yeah, I'm gun Superman. I'm like Superman if he had just guns coming out of his torso like udders as he flew through the sky. I was like, fuck yeah, this is awesome. And now as a 33-year-old, I'm doing this like. That was a human life I just extinguished.
That guy was
like,
a dad.
Nothing.
Speaking of opening a thing, I had the strangest thing that I experienced in the ghillie suit mission. There's this part where you climb the top of a tower where you can climb up there after taking out a sniper. And I got up there and there was a javelin, like a rocket launcher. And then a helicopter pops up and he's like, so play down. The helicopter will see you. And I tried like five times, like, why did you guys leave a rocket launcher here for me? I'm going to shoot this helicopter down. It's like, no, Soap, he'll see you. Like, no, I'll handle this. Don't worry about it. I got it. The game wouldn't let me. I don't know why they left a rocket launcher there. But that being said, the AC-130 mission is a nice, that gives us a way to turn into this, segue into this. I feel like this game, the thought that occurred to me with this game is it feels like it suffers from the Fight Club problem, by which I mean I feel like Fight Club is based on a novel that was supposedly satire, and I think Fight Club is even less satirical than the book it's based on. And Fight Club the movie never plays its hand enough to let you know that, hey, this is not necessarily all cool, and this is actually, some of this is bad. And I feel like Call of Duty Modern Warfare, revisiting it, really wants to have its cake and eat it too. There is an amount of awareness, I think, of... I think when they brought this into the modern era, I think there is an awareness on their part, which I should give them credit for. I feel like in 2007, we weren't having as many of these conversations. I feel like there's an awareness of some of this feels bad. Like, I feel like I want to believe that the AC-130 mission, which is, by the way, is just like black and white. You're taking out these little specks of humanity with a gigantic gun.
Entire task.
As you hear just this sort of dispassionate, like
yep,
okay,
yep,
that's got
he's all pieces. Yeah, fucked him up like a Lego man.
I feel like they want, I feel like there is some amount of commentary being made with that, but I don't think it says anything enough to where it can really stand behind it.
I agree with you, but I think this lives better as a historical object or critique of war or just like where people were at than any of the modern Call of Duty games do. And that's because after this, they became obsessed with like, okay, we've hired our like debatable war criminal Oliver North to consult on this. And like, we're going to hone this to, it's going to be gross and crass, but it's going to have like basically a private military contractor's PR firm go over it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure it's like the type of crass that a certain audience is okay with. Where this game is wild. Like, you can tell that it was made by 100 different people with 100 different opinions just by going off the quotes in the loading screen, where sometimes they're
the
like,
they're
Bush quotes that are like, some of them make them sound smart. Some of them I like clearly don't. There's a quote, one of my favorite quotes is, friendly fire isn't, attributed to unknown. Like,
yeah, every quote is like, they are so wildly alternating between like, war is fucking cool, like, and then somebody, the very next quote is like, war actually sucks ass. It's actually so bad we shouldn't do it, but anyway, here's your rocket launcher, fuck him up.
And then just like the price of like one missile. It's like,
what are you proving?
But I think going through this game, there's something about it, again, the AC-130 mission, I'm not saying it's good. There is obviously a lot in this game that's like very wrong. But I felt like I myself was left to really come away from the game pretty cynical about the military industrial complex because it yeah. doesn't have that extra layer of polish that, like, if you play the new Modern Warfare, it does everything to be like, hey, it's bad, but also like, right. you know, it takes bad guys to do good things.
I played through the whole campaign of the 2019 Modern Warfare. Did anybody else crank through? I thought it was pretty good, all things considered. Like, the character work that they did was, like, actually decent. It's the first Call of Duty campaign that I finished since the fucking Kevin Spacey one.
Griffin just loves Kevin Spacey. I can't try to tell him.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I'll finish anything that dude did.
Way to cancel your
anything.
Brother.
Anything.
Now I can't remember what point I was making because I'm so horrified.
Modern Warfare.
For me, there is almost the new Modern Warfare game campaign does try to walk that line. It does try to walk that line. And I think the equivalent of the AC-130 mission in the new Modern Warfare is the one where you are going through the townhouse with your night vision goggles on, which that technology has come a long way in the 12 years since the original Modern Warfare came out. So it looks hyper realistic, and you are having to make these difficult decisions as you are SEAL Team Sixing it in this place. And that's the scene with the famous, like, woman has a baby. And yeah. so, like, do you shoot the baby? Like, what they are
that's
trying
an
to
easy, that's what that moral decision an, is actually. That's an easy
they
one.
Don't let you. They don't let you. They reload the game saying, like, hey, don't shoot the baby. Hey, listen, we're going to give you the freedom to make the right sort of moral decisions that you want, but don't shoot the baby. There is something almost like. Not refreshing, but like this 2007 Modern Warfare, I feel like, doesn't try nearly as hard to do that. War is full of bad decisions that don't feel good even when you're doing the thing you have to do to succeed. And to me, there is something less crass about that than like
shoving it in your face.
Really shoving it in your face in a way that's like, we really, really want you to feel the effects of war, and we have a lot to say about that, and also check out this new fucking weed skin you can get on your Uzi. So, like,
there is that dichotomy that doesn't make a lot of sense. I also do want to mention, just kind of related to that, the like series of games that came after the first Modern Warfare, like the 2007 one.
Yeah.
It just got so, it basically just turned into even more of an extreme of what Plant was talking about. It basically turned into a Fast and the Furious experience, because they realized that the only way to one up what they had done previously was like, well, we're going to give you a drill like they had in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're going to drive underneath the ground and then pop up in the middle of a bank, and everyone's going to have lasers and drones and shit. And like, at a certain point, they like constantly had to one up themselves. And then I think Modern Warfare was like them trying to like scale that back a little bit.
Yeah.
So it has been this weird road.
So the thing that I did really dig about going back to this game is how benign everything is. Like, this is a boring world. Like, the world is just full of crap. The example I'd give is you go in one mission, you break into a TV station to do whatever MacGuffin you have to do in that mission. And the TV station is just so boring. There's like a room that's full of data servers. There's a break room that just has, you know, a generic fridge and like crappy food left on the table. And there's just so much boring stuff in this game. And I think it's really important that this existed, because until this point, technologically, there just wasn't like room or money for this. You know, older hardware, you could only effectively load in so many assets, and you only had the money for so much. So when you designed a room, it had to be like, okay, these are the things that really capture the character or whatever the point out room is. And then the rest of the room is just gonna be full of, I don't know, barrels, and everything's gonna be set in a factory. We're here, suddenly you had all this memory that the Xbox 360 had. You had asset farms. Activision was just spending more money on games, and you could put stuff in a game that was otherwise low priority, but when you're in the game, it feels so real. Like, it feels so real for the first time to be in a room where it's like, oh, this is just somebody's like paperwork or post-it notes that are around here, or like a dumb poster. And I think I remembered loving that so much, and it's such a bummer how quickly COD got away from that. And I think Modern Warfare 2 is like where they kind of jumped the shark. They they have a mission set in, you know, the fast food joint, and that's when it starts kind of skewing in towards irony. And then after that, it just goes full on like, yeah, whatever, like sci-fi. Yeah,
it turns into a Bond movie.
Yeah, a Bond movie. And yeah, I think like that. And then the other thing, I'm curious, did y'all play the remaster or did you play the original?
I played the single player remaster.
Okay.
I could not get the multiplayer, which we really need to spend some time talking about because it's wild if we went this whole time without. I could only get the multiplayer to work in the original. So that was something. This is not like, I don't know, this is not me being a hipster. I don't think you can be a hipster when it comes to Call of Duty Modern Warfare. I actually think the original looks better than the remaster does.
Weird, yeah.
Well, it feels better. Like, that was my thing is, I talked about this benign stuff. It feels, I don't know, it feels almost like, artsy is such a silly thing to say here, but you can feel the ambition of the game reaching so far beyond the power of that hardware. Like,
right.
You know, there's a big open area, but then like all the textures on the mountain are identical and repeating. It's like, wow, they were really reaching outside their bounds. We're like, you play the remaster, and don't get me wrong, a lot of people did some really great work on it. But it just feels like another game.
That's it. Yeah, maybe I'm just nostalgic for that like Xbox 360 era like grainy brown filter that they put on literally everything. Okay, multiplayer. Did anybody get a chance to play multiplayer?
Yeah,
it was hard as hell to get that to work. Man, it still kicks ass. It is. I hopped into a map, and it was Shipment, which is that very very small square symmetrical battlefield with like the shipping crates all over it that it has been in every Call of Duty game since, with like 32 people packed into this one place, everybody with like whatever weapons they wanted with like 10,000 times XP modifier on it. It's just like I was spawning and dying and spawning and dying and shooting someone and spawning and dying. And even though it was like on speed, I was still like, yeah, all right. Yeah, I remember. This is fucking fun.
I think
the customization of the class customization still like that is what hooked me. I played a lot of this one. I played a lot of Modern Warfare 2 because that's where they really stepped up the multiplayer game a lot. And it is the formula, the feel, the time to kill of Modern Warfare really was like fucking revolutionary.
Yeah, so there was a bunch of things that were like totally broke new ground. So the idea of perks in a multiplayer game like really hadn't happened before. The other big thing is the unlocks, like the idea of like,
yeah,
I can use this gun now and customize like a custom class with this gun that I just unlocked, and this perk that I just unlocked. So it made, like, previously you would just play multiplayer and hey, I won or I lost the match and that was it. But like the idea that you were making progression and unlocking new features as you played was really cool. I do want to mention, so Griffin talked a little bit about the time to kill, which is a very grim term in the context of what we were just talking about.
It's like it's a shooter
for multiplayer,
like,
yeah,
terminology,
yeah.
Right.
It just means how many shots you need to do to shoot to kill someone in a multiplayer game. It's very, very short in this game, like much shorter than any other Call of Duty game, I think, or at least one of the shortest. And you would think that would make it a much more like skill intensive game, but it actually levels the playing field because you can't do the like crazy, I'm going to slide 50 feet, jump and shoot and use a jetpack in midair and then like dominate people. It's so grounded in terms of like what you can and can't do. That like even someone like me, like I can actually like whatever, it's a little bit like camping, but I can like hold down an alleyway with a machine gun even though I haven't played the game in forever because
actually get the drop on people.
Right, you can drop
the drop on people. Where this is the only chance if you're somebody like me who's like not super skilled,
right?
But I can think a little bit and be a little crafty and get the drop on somebody and then have them not turn the tables.
There's also no
on me.
There's no health or armor or pickups on the map, so really all you have to know is like where's good bottlenecks, where's like where do firefights tend to, where are the hot spots?
It is the opposite of Halo from this point.
Yeah,
because I could not get into Halo at this point because you could get the drop on somebody and they would just somehow turn around and jump around and duck and you would be dead.
Yeah,
and
it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
They were shooting a stegosaurus at you. Like where did they get that?
It is funny though because what we now like. Now that people have played a lot of these, that first Call of Duty game was so poorly balanced, specifically like perks. So one of the perks gave you 25% more damage, and that was the only perk you should ever use. It was literally like that powerful. Another perk, you get 50% more health. So those two, like, they did not really balance it very properly. So what ended up happening was that a lot of people ended up just using, like, the same four setups. But it set the stage for a much more complex set of options over time, which, to be honest, I think have gone a little bit overboard in newer games because I can't follow it. But I think this was, I mean, really groundbreaking and continues to impact a lot of things.
Before we move on to the second half of the show, I did want to, because a lot of this talk has been about history, I went back and found from Joystick's top 10 of 2007.
Oh, boy. Oh, fuck yeah.
The write-up of Modern Warfare that they did.
Who did it?
Here's the frustrating thing about trying to write about Call of Duty 4 is that all of the phrases that best describe it have already been applied to, and in turn, drained of their impact by far less deserving games. It's a nonstop thrill ride. Its graphics are, quote, almost photorealistic. And it is, in fact, quote, so real that you'd almost think you were there. What Call of Duty 4 so authoritatively managed to do is reclaim those action game cliches and, in doing so, infuse them with a new, fresh power. What Call of Duty 4 single-player campaign could best be described as, though, is a masterclass on making good game design choices. From beginning to end, moments last just long as they need to, difficulty is perfectly balanced, and the action ebbs and flows between full-on chaos and chilling silence. From a pulse-pounding start to the final desperate ending, it's a meticulously crafted experience. We haven't even made mention of the game's multiplayer yet, which mixes the game's explosive presentation with some RPG fundamentals to predictably addictive results. Perhaps the most surprising thing about the game is how few actual revolutionary concepts are still contained within. It selects existing game design tools, hones them to practical perfection, and creates what is, in our opinion, the military shooter against which all others must be judged.
Justin McElroy. Who wrote that?
Yeah, it was me. It was me. My dumbass. The last time that Justin McElroy would be selected as our military shooter expert. Who can best capture the oorah spirit of the U.S. military? Oh,
y'all, I want to share one last thing before we go to the B segment. And this is just something for all of us to chew on, because you mentioned history. What 2020 is to 2007 is what 2007 is to 1994. Just like...
That's grim, Plant.
Yeah.
It's weird, man. We're actually going to cut that out and just do mine, because it was it was a much better energy to move on with. I could play that game too. 2006 is... Well, I can't do the math.
No, I only mentioned because I was listening to Retronauts when this game came out, and I was like, oh man, all those games from 1994, that was a long time ago. And now, like, oh God.
Happening. So, yeah, anyway, let's go to the break and think about good stuff, not bad. And we'll be right back.
Hey, everyone, welcome back. Do we do that? Do we introduce B-segments like that?
We love doing that, man. We got to welcome people back. They're in our house.
How will they know?
Yeah.
I wanted to bring a little Call of Duty trivia to the show today and test my fellow besties' knowledge of the Call of Duty franchise broadly. So what I've done here is I've copied down a single sentence from the plot description of the individual Call of Duty games, and I want to see if you guys can pick out what Call of Duty game they're from. You ready?
Are we limiting it to the whole Modern franchise. Warfare trilogy? Okay, the whole
trilogy. Whole franchise.
Okay.
Can I say something real quick before we move on?
Yes.
I was very relieved I liked that there was a character named Soap, and it made me wish that all the characters had names of regular household objects, because I think I could have kept track of this story much better the last 10 years if it was like Soap and Broom and Ashtray are back.
Fair point. Okay, here we go. In 1986, Alex Mason, now retired from active duty, pursues an obscure existence in Alaska with his son, 7-year-old David.
That's Black Ops.
That's Black Ops 2?
Any guesses?
Black Ops Declassified.
Griffin is correct. It is Black Ops 2. Very good. Okay, here we go.
I knew Alex Mason was Black Ops.
Didn't play that. I don't think I played any of the Black Ops campaigns.
So. They're good. Those are good.
Yeah. The first two are good. Yeah, first two are good. Okay. When the meeting is underway, Price attempts to assassinate Zakharov with a Barrett 50 caliber sniper rifle. However, the bullet only severs his arm.
That's this one. That's the one we've played for. That's not a very challenging played. One.
Okay, I, that was just me just testing you guys to see if you were paying attention to this story. As the police approach the hotel, a victorious Price smokes a cigar watching Makarov's twitching corpse.
Fucking three, and yeah, three. Spoilers. Three has the best ending of any video game ever. Three is the one where you and your buddy dress up in rhino suits of armor and just like go into the bad guy's hotel and just like get like shot, but it bounces off of you like you're fucking Iron Man.
Okay, counterpoint. Advanced Warfare ends with you severing off your own robotic arm to let Kevin Spacey drop into a
fall
fire.
Fall to his death. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good one, too.
Griffin didn't like that part, though. He thought it pushed him into kind of a tragedy. That was, why is that one so sad? Hey, guys, did you think the new Call of Duty is super sad? They did that to K-Pax. Fuck. You believe that?
Okay. Dr. Ludwig Maxis, whose brain resided in a mechanical drone at one time, arrives at Argatha and is given a new body by Dr. Monty, a self-proclaimed omnipotent being and member of the Order of the Keepers.
Infinite Warfare.
What the fuck?
It's Infinite Warfare.
Sounds cool as hell. Infinite Warfare. I can't believe I skipped that one. No, wait. Did I play that one? Yeah, I did. That had a robot in it that gave its life for humanity or something.
Fresh is like the one person who loves this game.
It's a great game. But not correct.
Really?
It feels like an early... It feels like... That feels like so close to some Wolfenstein shit that I want to say it's one of the World War II games.
No, it's Black Ops 3.
Maybe you're cheap. Maybe...
Plan is correct. It is Black Ops 3.
I forgot Black Ops 3 is like a weird.
Well, it was the zombies. Ooh. No. It wasn't in the campaign. Cool. It was from the zombies campaign.
That doesn't count. That's cheating.
It's in the package. Okay, one last one. One last one. Ready? Diane makes it out of the house and onto the property's salvage yard. Here, she meets two troll-like creatures by the names of Bobo and Lil Devil, the judge's severely deformed grandchildren.
Cheers. It's a plot of Cheers. Diane.
Is it
Diane
Cheers?
Chambers.
That's right. Yeah, Chris is right on this one. It is the plot of Cheers.
I have no idea.
It is actually Nothing But Trouble, a film with Demi Moore and Chevy Chase, and Dan Aykroyd plays a very old judge. Excellent film. Highly recommend it. Check it out.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, Russ did say that it would either a Dan Aykroyd movie or a Call of Duty.
We all knew it.
So shame on us.
We all knew it couldn't be Call of Duty because the protagonist was a woman.
Yeah,
it's like a giveaway.
I do enjoy that the one woman soldier in this game has to be rescued. That is the one mission. Is she goes down in a helicopter and you have to go rescue the one woman in this game. I did. A few people shared their memories. This person hits on a topic a point on this game we didn't cover. My dad and I played Modern Warfare's campaign all the time when I was growing up. I hardly ever played multiplayer, so I got really attached to Modern Warfare's campaign, and to this day, I can still remember the big surprises. I think it was the first game where I had a main character actually die in a helicopter crash after the nuke went off. I think this day has some of the best set pieces in Call of Duty. Mile High Club is one of the best missions. I think Modern Warfare is genuinely dynamic and memorable cast for a Call of Duty game. Good all around and hasn't really shifted from being my favorite. The nuke going off and the character die, like I think that was like very, very jarring, very wild.
And then it is incredible. And then they tried to do it a lot, including in right after that in Modern Warfare 2 at the end of the No Russian mission. It's like, whoa, what won't we do? And it's
I do want to mention he called out the Mile High Club mission, which is it takes place after the story in like a post credits scene that you play this whole like assaulting an airplane mission, which is like, I mean. Ignoring the political connotations, but like as a level, it was very, very cool.
It's fucking rad. I remember there was like a miniature speed run scene that popped up around that one level because there's a timer on it. And I remember watching videos in 2007 of people like streamlining their routes and doing all kinds of dope shit.
That's an alley-oop to a tweet reply that we got from Mike. I used to beat Mile High Club in Veteran for people at college for weed. I was like an independent contractor for microtransactions.
So there was a trophy attached to the to the finishing that like under the certain amount of time, and it was as insanely hard. So I'm not surprised that he was able to, I guess, get some weed for that.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, we got a question from Greg. Even though the single player in this is pretty great, do you think Call of Duty's rise to big fame has left the industry in worse condition overall?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
It did in the immediate aftermath of Modern Warfare 1 and 2, where you started to get the fucking Medal of Honor tried to do this, right? Medal of Honor Warfighter? Was that? No, there was like a modern Medal of Honor game that they tried to do. You saw Battlefield start to move in that direction. What was the Battlefield 4, I think, was the modern day Battlefield? Right?
3, I think, was the first modern day one.
I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is not a detriment to the industry or whatever. I just don't think that those games made as much of a splash necessarily.
Yeah, I think you're right also that maybe in the short term, but Call of Duty was so dominant that similar to WoW at a certain point, people were just like, whatever, we can't compete. Like, we quit. We got to do our own thing.
I definitely think it led to the proliferation of RPG mechanics in online multiplayer modes and shooter modes, which is like,
which I love.
Which is pretty sick. Right, yeah, it's like my favorite shit.
It's funny, you mentioned that Medal of Honor, Griffin, just to fix the chronology here. This game comes out in 2007 at the same time as Medal of Honor Airborne.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a World War
II.
Not
a bad game.
And then 2010, Medal of Honor, the reboot, just called Medal of Honor, and it's a modern day modern day shooter.
That was the tier one
talk about like
game.
Panicking, and you're like, no one likes this war anymore. We've done all we can with this war.
Also, I believe Steven Spielberg's son worked on that game. The lineage continues.
Fantastic. Anybody been playing anything else they want to hit on?
I've been messing around with Supernatural a little bit, which is Exercise Beat Saber. It's a VR game. It is basically Beat Saber, where you have notes flying at you that you have to cut with your two different swords. One is white, one is black, instead of the red and blue dichotomy of Beat Saber. Only it is a lot more sort of dynamic movement based. You have to like pivot and turn around a whole lot. You have these little triangles that fly at you that you have to basically do constant lunges and squats to get under. Like it is a more sort of physically taxing experience. But the big thing is that they have like trainers and like training regimen they add a new one basically every day. So they have somebody like, yeah, get in that fucking triangle, dude. Yeah, get that, squeeze that meat, or whatever trainers like to say to get you hyped up to, probably not squeeze that meat, but you know what I'm saying. And it's been a fairly, it has whipped my ass. Like it has, it is genuinely, I used to play Beat Saber for exercise for like a half hour at a time and, you know, get a good sweat going. But like, 15 minutes with this game and I am like in the ground. It dynamically scales the difficulty based on how you're doing in the song, which is troubling for me because I have gotten pretty good at Beat Saber but not good at being healthy and exercising. So it's like, oh damn, this dude's a fucking legend, let's give him all that. And so it's just rough. It is $20 a month.
Yeah,
you do have to subscribe to it.
I try,
but there are daily, I've been doing it too. They have a new workout every day,
right?
And the songs are actually like real songs that you would know. I mean, they're you're paying, I think you're getting more probably like real licensed music than you would, you know, were this not. But yeah, I mean, $20 a month is considerable, but new workouts every day and new songs and stuff. If it, but I've been enjoying it. It's hard.
It's
it makes
hard
my
as
body
fuck.
Feel bad.
I tried it too, and I don't know that I love the people yelling at me as much.
Oh yeah.
I've not
you think
done.
You'd be used to it.
I've never done like that must be. I've never done Peloton or anything like that. But it just seems like, I don't know, they're up in my space and like, I don't need to know that I'm doing a good job. It's okay, I'll be fine.
I love that. Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
I need
seems
that
faulty.
I would pay $100 a month if that was a plugin I could put into any video game. So if I'm like raiding on Final Fantasy 14 and just have like, you know, one of these extremely fit human beings just pop up on the screen like, yeah, bud, you're really maximizing and optimizing your DPS. Don't forget to avoid the AoE attacks. Here comes a big one. Yes.
Keep those dots up, bud.
Keep it's those dots up, really... but refresh your dots, bud. Yeah, work it.
It's like a human Clippy and it makes me very uncomfortable.
I have been playing a neat little thing that I just randomly... Switch is so frustrating because, like, they have so many games on there, and it's so hard to tell what's worth your time and what's not. Right. I spend so much time, like, opening stuff and trying to figure out, like, is this anything? But it's called Ministry of Broadcast. Have you guys heard of it?
No. I've heard of it. I just saw... I was doing the same thing, like, perusing the eShop and saw that and looked into it. It sounds cool.
It's cool. It's a platformer. The story is that you're in sort of a 1984 style, like, oppressive regime, and to win freedom for your family, you have to compete on a reality TV show that is presented through a platformer, and the very close to, I mean, the best, like Prince of Persia, like that style. It has that sort of like graphical look too, and it feels kind of like a Prince of Persia, where you're like solving puzzles and jumping puzzles to win your freedom. But it's very narrative focused, so there's like breaks in between the stages where you're like meeting the other contestants, and it's really cool. It's like a neat sort of thing. I haven't gotten deep enough into it to figure out sort of where it's going, but sort of tonally kind of like Papers, Please around that area, maybe a little bit sillier. But like mechanically, it's very cool, and I don't know. It's a neat thing. It's called Ministry of Broadcast. It's cool. Looks good too.
Fresh, how about you?
Nothing really jumping out apart from what we've mentioned: Supernatural and Half-Life Alyx, which my wife is now playing and loving as well. So it is a big hit.
Yeah, I can say I'm definitely am not playing the Super Mario 64 port that is on PC. Definitely not playing it, but
no.
I think as an idea, it is very interesting to see what a port of a Nintendo 64 game looks like on PC versus emulation. I had never like thought about the fact that there are huge differences between an emulation of a game, which is making it exactly how it runs, ran on the Nintendo 64, and something that's a true port where it like is... matches the resolution of what's on your screen and can be widescreen and connects naturally to modern controllers. And the idea of what that could look like down the line, I don't know if like I seriously doubt Nintendo will be a company to ever even try that, because they're so keen on limiting their games to their hardware. But right. In terms of like bringing back that kind of era of 3D games on PC, suddenly seems like a really interesting idea to me. And I hope that more companies that did have console exclusives consider doing that down the line. I mean, we're already seeing it with Sony bringing its exclusives to PC from this current generation. Hope that I would love to see stuff like that happening in the future.
Did they make that thing from scratch?
I will not talk about it. Okay. Because I think it's legally dubious.
Oh, I mean, it 100% is, so there's no question about that, but yeah, it's pretty
yeah
nuts.
Dubious it even is too gray. Legally we're all clear on now morally though that's a harder question. Next week we're going under the sea to talk about BioShock. The original. Thank you, Plant. Appreciate that. I do. So play BioShock and share with us your BioShock memories if you got them. Or any sort of, you know, if you find any sort of neat ephemera from the time, things that stick out to you from the original release back in 2007, you can send it to mail at besties.fan.
Yes, and
where that can go.
Would you kindly follow us on Twitter? At the Besties Pod, the Twitter is not
Daddy
a lie.
Like.
If you want to join our newsletter, you can do that. It's the pinned tweet. Also, y'all, we have a T-shirt. We filed a T-shirt.
Oh,
we're a real grown-up podcast.
Yeah, looks like we made it.
It's very cool. It's our logo.
Between this and the cake is a lie. This was a very fucking memetic time.
Yeah,
this is a meme year. That is going to do it for us. Make sure to join us again next week. Follow and listen for free on Spotify. Please share the show with besties.fan is the link. We really appreciate it. And thanks to you so much for listening. We'll be back with you again next week. Be sure to join us for the Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!